This is the Bright Fire News Podcast with journalist John Christopher Collins, where the truth and facts are honored, pursued, discovered, and told. Welcome and thank you for listening to the Bright Fire News Podcast, igniting and fueling a bright fire of and for truthful and factual news.
On this episode, I do a profile of Russ Willoughby. We sit down to discuss his hobbies, military background, and more. Well, everyone, welcome to this episode of the Bright Fire News Podcast. Joining me on this episode is Russ Willoughby. Russ, how are you?
Great, man. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you so much for joining me. Well, I wanted to get into Russ's backstory. I wanted to discuss specifically his military service. To start off this profile episode, Russ Willoughby gets into talking about his hobbies.
So some hobbies I have, I love motorcycles. I love riding bikes. That's one of my favorite things. A lot of outdoors, scenery, hiking, trees, land. Also a drummer. I don't get to do that as much as I used to. And some random hobbies. I love the yo-yo. I'm actually fairly...
Are you pretty good?
I like to think I'm fairly all right. I'm quite a few steps above walking the dog and rocking the baby, I'd say. So, yeah, I'll have to show you some sometime.
Are you a lefty or a righty?
Righty. Oh, great. But I could double a bit, so great. Slightly ambidextrous, only on a yo-yo.
Well, after this quick break, we'll come back with more from Russ Willoughby, and we'll get into his story. Hey, everyone. This is John Christopher Collins. I'm a journalist and host of the Bright Fire News Podcast. I'm here during the break to talk to you about Twitter. No, not Twitter drama and heated nonsensical debate, but my Twitter account. Follow me on Twitter at RealJCJourno. If you want good, honest, and solid journalism, I invite and welcome you to follow my Twitter at RealJCJourno. That's Real, J-O-U-R-N-O. Thank you, and I'll see you on Twitter.
The Bright Fire News Podcast. Stories that matter.
Well, we're back with Russ Willoughby. Russ, since this is a profile episode on you, I really want to focus on your story, kind of what makes you tick, what makes you do what you do. What made you join the military, and what branch did you join?
So I joined the United States Navy. Initially, I was going to join the Marines, and the reason being... That was the first presentation that was done at Branson High School from the recruiters was gotcha. For the Marines. So I had a poster on my wall and a couple of Marines things, and I was looking into it. But my papa, so my dad's dad, my grandfather on my dad's side was a Navy veteran, as was my uncle on my dad's side as well. Vietnam veteran and Korea veteran for him. My papa, a Korean veteran, air traffic controller on the USS Boxer. My uncle, a Riverine, a very difficult mobile river unit. Very tough history and position. Those who are familiar with Vietnam know what that means. And I just... There's a connection for me throughout the history of my family with the Navy and also some Army guys. So that's always fun. There's one football game a year, the Army-Navy football game. We just don't talk to each other. It works out easier that way. So I ended up talking to a Navy recruiter whenever I was 17, senior in high school. And that's whenever it really started getting serious and talking to my parents. You know, if you're 17, you have to get a signature from them to sign off on you enlisting. So I was able to do that before graduation and had everything set up. Gave myself a couple of months to leave the job that I was doing at the time, have some time with friends and family. And then it was in July of 2008 that I went to boot camp.
Wow. So was there a moment during all of that where you were like, okay, I knew I kind of wanted to do it, but now I know for sure this is what I want to do?
If anything, it was the opposite before boot camp and in the beginning of boot camp.
Wow.
I was very convinced early on, and as the time got closer and the anxiety kind of started to build, I was second-guessing myself a lot, honestly, and just the wonderful time and memories that I had with friends. Now, obviously, the thing about that is I also wasn't working right out of high school, so how rough could the memories have been, spending every part of my day and night making memories, creating memories? That's not a lifelong thing that I could do, not financially set up for that. But as it got closer, I could remember feeling a little bit like, can I do this? Is this actually something that's in me? And even the first few days of boot camp, first few weeks, honestly, are real hard for the transition. So those made me second guess a lot. But as I got into it, and even before boot camp was over, which was only a 12-week experience, I was 100% dedicated then.
Wow. So it was a progression really for you.
Very much so. Yeah. Wow. That started out, and it's the unknown, you know, born and raised in Branson, 12 years senior from graduate from Branson High School. Like, this is what I knew. These are the people that I knew. I know where everything is. I'm very comfortable and very at home here. So at 18 to go, well, bye, everybody. I'm going to do a totally new career that I've never actually seen before. Just talk to some recruiters and some friends who had listed before me and just take the dive and the plunge to a total commitment. Because when you sign that contract, there's no backing out after you get in.
Well, we're on the topic of boot camp. What is one of your most memorable moments?
So the crazy thing, and I hope this continues in life, and I think it's a common thread that many people experience, is during it, if I really put myself there, I can remember a lot of the rough stuff and the emotions. But looking back, the camaraderie and the laughter and the behind-the-scenes things that happened when you are fully immersed 24 hours a day with a division. For us, it was about 120 person, two divisions. So we had about 60 in ours and another 60 that shared the same quarters. So it felt like 120 people in basically the size of a few college dorm rooms with an open floor plan. Everybody's stacked up on racks. You're all sharing the same restrooms and the same, so head is what we call them in the Navy, ship slang. And with that, even the shower situation, they had two big shower poles with like three or four heads on each one. They would only turn two of the heads on. So you're with 60 people at a time going in a literal line, wow, working your way around the shower station. And you had about, I'd say, a combined 30 seconds that you'd be under the water. So the efficiency would be going around and getting wet real quick, lathering up before you hit the next shower head. Boom. Rinse everything off. Go back through and do it again for anything you missed. And then you got to get out because 5 minutes for hygiene, as it were, including any restroom needs, showering, shaving, brushing your teeth, all of that. So whenever you're in that fast-paced scenario, there's not a lot of time for talking, but there's such a need for camaraderie. You know, whenever you're in ranks or whenever your petty officers are RDCs is what we call them in the Navy. They're basically drill instructors. When they're in there, you're not talking because you don't want to get IT. It's called intensive training, where they work you out until you might get sick even. So you're very much, you know, straight. Yes, petty officer, not saying anything out of ranks or out of turn. So you find those moments within there that you can talk. You can tell stories about back home and being with people from walks of life I had never experienced, being from Branson, Missouri. It was really cool to get all of those perspectives. And then just the way that it starts off with the RDCs, again, kind of drill instructors, being very aggressive, very angry, standoffish almost, yelling, but still kind of funny. That was the hard part for me, was to not laugh because I thought it was hilarious a lot. And then by the end, really having that sense of respect and that we're all people, and now we're all people that are now sailors. We're in the United States Navy together. It was a really fascinating transition for me to experience at 18.
You mentioned rank earlier. So what was your job and what was your rank?
So whenever I originally enlisted, I wanted to be explosive ordnance disposal. Probably thank God that didn't end up working out. So I went electronics technician. I was in charge of communications specifically. So things like ship to shore, ship to plane. There's also a radar side. I didn't do that. I spent most of my time focusing on ultra high frequency as well as very high frequency systems. And I was a third class petty officer, United States Navy.
Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed so many parts of it, and I didn't enjoy so many other parts. But again, when I look back, all I can think about is the great times and really the bond, especially in the Navy and in most branches, Army and Marine deployment, especially. Obviously, the Coast Guard has very similarities, even though slightly smaller deployments on average, not saying they don't do long ones. We call them puddle pirates. So it's a fun rivalry between the Coast Guard and the Navy, for those that are unaware. And the Air Force as well at times, is you're in a smaller unit 24 hours a day, extended periods, with all your literal dirty laundry aired out for the world. So everyone, especially in your divisions or in your units within this group, I was on a guided missile cruiser, so about a 350-ish man and woman crew. We had women officers and then all male enlisted crew. Whenever that sounds like quite a few people, until you're all the only thing you have in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, where you can't see land or anything for as far as the horizon in every direction. It's a really cool time to see how people pass time, how many times there are to talk and have conversations and reminisce about being home. And those experiences and those memories, I love the friendships and brotherhoods that I've created along this way. I still talk to many of them today. It's one of the great things about social media. I'm not a big social media guy. I think there are a lot of negatives involved, but I'm very blessed to be living in the time that it is available so I can keep track of my shipmates, my friends, my buddies, wherever they go in the country or the world as well.
You're listening to the Bright Fire News Podcast. We'll be back with Russ Willoughby after this. Hey everyone, it's John Christopher Collins. I'm a journalist and host of the Bright Fire News Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about my official website, johnchristophercollins.com. Do you want to follow my work, listen to my podcast, see what stories I'm working on, and learn more about me? Go to johnchristophercollins.com to do all of that and more. Do you want good and truthful journalism, solid reporting? Go to johnchristophercollins.com.
You're listening to the Bright Fire News Podcast, where the truth and facts are honored, pursued, discovered, and told.
Willoughby also shared a moment that he still remembers to this day of seeing dolphins while on the ship.
One of my favorite things that I love to tell everyone, we're on ship. Now, one thing, when you're on ship, you don't have your phone with you because there's no service anyway. So unless you're just using it as an iPod or something, most of the time my phone was just locked up, powered down to my rack, never needed it, never used it. The unfortunate thing is that means I did not get a video of this. And to this day, it's one of my biggest. Luckily, I can live it every second of it in my head, literally. I've held onto that memory for so long and recall it often. We're out on ship. We're in the Pacific Ocean. Again, guided missile cruiser 54. Boom, CG-54, USS Antietam, baby. Power to prevail. And we're looking out on the horizon. And water was very calm. The sea was calm that day. You know, we're technically a small boy, but it's a pretty big craft, in my opinion. We're no aircraft carrier, but, you know, 400-plus man crew capabilities, all kinds of supplies and all kinds of weaponry, being a missile cruiser. So we're looking out on the horizon, and the sea looks choppy all of a sudden. And not like, not wavy choppy like I'm used to. It almost looked like when Table Rock Lake gets choppy, but obviously a different color. So seeing these very small choppy waves happening, I was kind of confused. And as we got closer, we ended up in a migration of what I kid you not was thousands of dolphins.
Wow.
So wow. We are coming to them and port and starboard and eventually fore and aft of the ship, we are surrounded by dolphins. And they're jumping over each other. They're as far as the eye can literally see. And I remember looking back at one point, and all along the life rails, the kind of thin lines, wires that we have around the side of like the flight deck, or of everything except the flight deck, I should say, the whole ship is looking out both sides and experiencing all of this together. There was not a phone. Maybe there was one phone. Hey, if anybody was out there on the Antietam that day and have a video, please send this. But there was not a phone that I remember seeing. Everyone was just in awe and amazement and smiling in this moment. And we passed through it. It took a while. It took minutes, literally, of just straight migrating dolphins. And as we got through it, everything was over, and we all talked about it for probably 20 minutes, which you often don't get a lot of free time. And this is in the middle of the day, so this was the work day. And just that camaraderie, that emotion, that feeling, like that made the rest of the week of work feel like nothing. It was unreal.
That's what I was going to ask you. Would you say that that moment, it almost seems like something you'd see out of a movie.
Yes.
Really? Willoughby goes on to say that life changes quickly and you enter a sense of normalcy pretty quick.
And it's interesting because you get to that sense of normalcy after even a few weeks whenever you're out on the ocean, because life changes quickly. You're used to now, you know, this galley and this, everything is very repetitive, very the same. Now you're in ladder wells instead of stairways. Now you're stepping over knee knockers in the passageways, which are our hallways. Now you're used to rocking yourself to sleep at night based on the ship's direction of the waves. Everything changes quickly. So you do, it's a kind of a shift in what normal is, but the sense of normalcy is almost there. And being able to experience that within it was like if you got to go on a vacation, you know, during a work year and experience something magical. You feel kind of refreshed whenever you go back to it. That was awesome. Also, the middle of the night when there's no moon on the ocean with no lights, so Navy ships don't allow light to escape the ship after dark. So around dusk time, we go to darken ship. We put all kinds of dividers that are thick black canvas. We use red lights for the interior that exposes itself to the weather decks. And so it's completely pitch black on the outside. Cannot see the hand in front of your face. And to be out there and to feel the sea breeze, I used to lay out usually like on the aft flight deck or somewhere as low as I could go, maybe the fantail, just lay down and I would look up and you could see every single star in the sky.
Wow.
Better than you could see the hand in front of your face because of how dark we were. Like, those are just the moments and the connections that I will have forever and I'm very thankful to have.
Wow.
The Bright Fire News Podcast. Stories that matter.
Hey everyone, it's John Christopher Collins. I'm a journalist and host of the Bright Fire News Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about my official website, johnchristophercollins.com. Do you want to follow my work, listen to my podcast, see what stories I'm working on, and learn more about me? Go to johnchristophercollins.com to do all of that and more. Do you want good and truthful journalism, solid reporting? Go to johnchristophercollins.com.
Getting the facts right, because journalism matters. This is the Bright Fire News Podcast with journalist John Christopher Collins.
Willoughby also comments on what he wishes people understood about military life and how it's not all about running and gunning.
Whenever we, as a society, often I think of veterans, of servicemen and women, there's this often portrayed notion from what I experienced before military service, as well as what I kind of see others who have not been through service experience as well, where it's all the infantry style running and gunning, foxhole combat scenario for every military veteran or service member.
Mm-hmm.
That is in the vast minority of what the military is. These are people who come together with different jobs, different walks of life to be able to create a unity that allows those missions to be accomplished, to allow us to be the presence that we are in the world. So everybody's not running and gunning, because now, you know, you've got guided missile systems that are running off of radar systems. So now we got to make sure the radar is good, but we also have to make sure the computer's up for us to access all of that. So we've got IT professionals and personnel. Let's not forget, you got hundreds of thousands of people that need to be paid bi-weekly every single week. So we've got administrative stuff that needs done all the time. And who's going to make sure that the careers that are needing filled have the appropriate percentage of folks from the military within them? All of that comes together in a really amazing way. And I'll be honest, it is not an efficient way. The processing, the purchasing, if you have to get something, I'll give an example. Being an electronics technician, I needed a power supply to run our Hydra communication, which is virtually just like walkie-talkies around so people can communicate on ship to each other from distance. The power supply, I could have gone down to a store that was called Fry's Electronics back in the day on the West Coast and probably picked one up for about $250 at the time. And that would have been the exact same power supply. But due to it not having a military grade rating, which proves that it can do slightly more things just because it's been tested to do so, it was over a $5,000 power supply. So there is room. I don't want people to think that, and I'm not getting into military budgets and whatever, defense spending, that's not where I'm at. There is room for more efficiency.
Sure.
But the fact that so many people can come together and still accomplish what we accomplish on a day-to-day basis and accomplish missions successfully and being the presence that we are successfully, it's unfathomable, really. So to think that everybody is running and gunning would be one thing. And the second thing is to remember a lot of these things, like I was on a $2.2 billion battleship that was ran mostly by 18 to 22-year-olds.
Wow.
You have your senior enlisted, obviously. You have your chain of command whenever it comes to the officer ranks, and your captain is obviously much more experienced. But the majority of the people on ship are 18 to 22. The majority of people in the foxholes often are 18 to 22. This is a very weird world when you consider that there is an 18-year-old unstricken, potentially going to be a bosun's mate that just graduated 6 months ago, that has gone through basic training and then enough training to drive the ship that's worth $2.2 billion and has the capacity to eliminate a lot of countries. And that's the responsibility that, yes, is, you know, supervised, but that's the kind of stuff that gets put on shoulders at a young age that is an amazing transition into adulthood.
That's really weird when you stop and think
about
that.
It is so fascinating.
Because you think about it, you're like, okay, yeah, they're a bunch of young guys. Yeah. And you're like, wait.
Young, strapping young men. What were you doing at 19 years old? Were you the most responsible person? Did you have it all figured out?
No.
Yeah. Did you want to go take care of all this battleship stuff? It's hilarious in reality, but it's also an amazing testament.
Later, Willoughby talked about the world that he hopes we never have to see again.
Obviously, you know, we have the generations before us, the greatest generation, especially Vietnam, Korea going forward. There's so many, or Korea, Vietnam going forward. There's so many times that kids, literal kids, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids were trying to sneak in and enlist. Mm. That was a different world that I hope we don't have to see ever again.
Right.
And I'm very thankful that we have the process that we do now. You know, no draft. That's awesome. Like, huge check to that. Shout out to all the people that are still signing up enough where we don't have a nationwide draft. We obviously have Selective Service and the ability to, should we ever need to. But as of now, there are enough folks that throughout what they see in their young life say, I'm willing to stand up, to work, and then to fight and defend and die for if that need arises, this mm-hmm. country and our way of life. That's pretty amazing for how long this has been going.
Willoughby also spoke about which government-related issue he's most concerned about. I asked him to answer to the level he was comfortable.
I think what's interesting now is the separation into further subdivided groups. And I'm not saying that is a government issue specifically, but it's not being helped by what we see through the administrations and the different programs that are being put into place. I would love to see a path where we, as citizens of this great country, are unified and united more, even on stuff that we don't agree with. Like, I don't want everybody to agree. That would honestly be a terrible country. I know that a lot of folks think, man, wouldn't it be great if everybody just thought like me? That, to me, sounds like hell. I do not want that. I want very healthy communications, respectful communications that understand another side, even if we don't agree with them. And I want those kind of talks to happen and that conversation to be elevated based on its merit and not based on reactions and algorithms and likes right now that, hey, look at all the comments. Well, yeah, people are commenting because they're mad. And oftentimes when we get angry, have you ever sent a super long text message to somebody you were mad at? I've never sent a long block text message unless I was like, well, I'm going to tell this person something real quick, tap, 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 tap. But whenever I'm happy, it's like, hey, man, I love you. Like, it's that simple, that easy. Or sometimes it's just the recognition and acknowledgement. So we as people are less inclined to interact as much with that. But that is now being used and shown as, hey, these algorithms show that people like division. And so we're subdividing into more groups. Now it's not just, oh, hey, here's Democrats and Republicans. Now it's, hey, here's 19 different sects of the S-E-C-T-S, by the way, of the Republican Party, the Democrat. It's feeling like the Baptist Church of the 90s and 2000s. Where, okay, we're Southern Baptists. Well, we're south of this Southern line, but slightly to the East Baptists. And here's what we believe. Like, I really would like for those groups to start recombining, not to join forces against another group, but to give us a system where the communication and conversation is open and rated in a way that lets the best of it come to the top. If you have the best ideas, that's where we should be focused, not if you have the most divisive ideas.
Mm. Willoughby went into some detail about why he doesn't use social media and how he's just as guilty as anyone else of being stuck in the newsfeed.
For me personally, I am just as guilty of being stuck in the newsfeed. The algorithms, everything works well. Facebook's worth a gajillion dollars for a reason. So they know what to do to keep the attention, to keep the notifications, to keep the little serotonin burst. And I am not a strong enough person to overcome that or combat that whenever I'm going through the feed, through the scroll. So for me, it's a bit of a time suck. Yeah. But also, yes, I find that it drags me into a lot of negative conversations of places. And the fact that I'm aware of things like the Internet Research Agency, other things that are literal troll farms. There was actually a recent study that was done, and I do not have, if you would like, I could go reference the source for this at another time. But there are studies that were done recently that took the top 20 Christian-related Facebook pages for the religion of Christianity and found that 19 of them were actually outside of the country troll farms that also were responsible for the ownership of other pages, like atheist pages and things. Wow. They would build these followers together to pit them against each other. Why? Because whenever you have two very separate groups that come together on the same page, it's an explosion of fighting and content. And Facebook looks at that and says, that's a very successful page. Look at how much how many people are talking, how much interaction is happening on this page. So the fact that it's not even often real in what starts it, but becomes real in those people who get sucked up and swiped into the emotions of that and start fighting against their neighbor and start thinking everyone has these crazy ideas that were posted from a troll. And if you're unfamiliar with the internet slang of troll, it's somebody who's literally just trying to start drama, start fights, post things that are controversial. So if a troll is starting this, their biggest form of success would be seeing the uproar of what they created, be it a meme or some fake news story that they put out or false fact. Their goal is to get higher interaction. And I hate to say it, y'all, it also makes their page more valuable and they can sell that. They are now capitalizing off of people's energy of anger, their emotions, their emotional well-being and state. I don't think that helps the overall mental health of us as a society.
Wow. Wow. So looking at the current news, the most recent news about social media and the whistleblowers that have come out talking about the work environments there, do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm curious to see where social media has been constantly evolving since its inception. And whenever you look at inventions that are this worldwide and successful, and I mean, almost the population of the world is active on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and TikTok when you combine those each day.
In addition, Willoughby commented on the future of social media.
So to see the evolution that it's had to get into because of its exponential growth that I'm not sure was ever fathomed at the very beginning. They might have seen it coming quickly after they saw how quick it was growing. But to have to implement systems and now, okay, now we need to make sure that we're fact checking and now we need to change these algorithms so that we're only promoting these certain ideas. It's going, in my eyes, I have no idea. I'm the first to say I'm ignorant on a lot of these things. In my eyes, it comes to a point that either slides down one way of being overanalyzed to the point of failure. It's not going to be the platform that people are using it for now and adapt into something that is not used. Or what I see is potentially more likely, everything's going to try to shift to make more of the population happy as a user and a worker on the front end. And if it makes sense, I guess, I think that will be a front to the real behind the scenes goals, because as long as content of anger is still king for their bottom line, that's probably going to be what they focus on going forward.
In conclusion, Willoughby expressed his appreciation for those who are serving in the armed forces.
I appreciate everyone's military services out there, either past, present, or future. I hope that if anything out of this conversation, there are some people that maybe have a slightly different perspective on what the military, quote unquote, is as a whole. And I hope that for those out there that are considering joining up, just take the time to consider for yourself really, truly what it looks like for you and your future, because for many people, it is an amazing thing. But don't forget, oftentimes, talking to you out there, you might be 17 right now. So there are other options as well. I would have gone back and done more research, not saying I would not have joined the Navy, but there were plenty of other opportunities that were afforded that would have been good just as a general rule of thumb to have more information about. But I was dedicated from the very beginning, you know, like I said, early on in junior high, I started to get into that. But that doesn't mean that there are not great options for those who do not serve in the military to still be very active members of our community and then therefore our country as well. So it's not the military being, you know, the 1%, as it were, roughly of the population, and then the civilians. Like, this is our country. The military is a part of it to go and defend our way of life here. So you can also be the best citizen that you can be, and you're doing just as good of a service as anybody overseas.
Well, Russ Willoughby, thank you so much for joining
me. John Christopher, you are the man, dude. This is awesome. This is a lot of fun. I'm going to have to check out your other interviews.
This has been the Profile episode with Russ Willoughby. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Bright Fire News Podcast with journalist John Christopher Collins. Special thanks to everyone who makes this podcast possible. Comments and questions can be sent in by going to johnchristophercollins.com or thebrightfirenewspodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and please join us next time.